You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
I normally will compare rifles with 15-mile-an-hour wind at 1,000, and Chi-Tac has 49 inches of drift in 15-mile-an-hour wind at 1,000. We shot a couple of brown bears a couple of months ago with it in Alaska. And the guide, before the hunt, he said, I've never seen a one-shot kill. Been guiding brown bears forever. They take lead like no other animal. And I was pretty cocky about my rifle. I said, well, you're going to see a one-shot kill this time.
Welcome to the Hardworking Hunter Podcast. Here I plan to bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly of some amazing adventure stories, as well as share some lessons learned over years of hunting experience. You can find out more about Hardworking Hunter, including films and other articles, at hardworkinghunter.com. Welcome back to the Hardworking Hunter Podcast. So today, man, we are got a full schedule on, mainly talking about, I'm thinking long-range rifle shooting is going to be the topic. We'll bounce around, maybe some mule deer, maybe some elk, but today I got my good buddy Brian Reed on, and I would say Brian is pretty much a long-range guru. And how's it going, Brian?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me, Zach.
Yeah, no, for sure. Excited to finally sit down and record a podcast about this. For me, to be honest, it's, you know, Brian's kind of the guy that, I don't want to say got me into long range shooting, but definitely like gave me that last push to like go above and beyond and really try to hone my craft. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I tried to think that first hunt that we were on, I remember we took some long range shots at some rocks and had fun doing it, but then we ended up shooting an elk at like 50, 60 yards or something like that.
Right. Yeah. No, that was crazy. You know, I mean, I've never really been around it that much. You know, I mean, you see it on TV, you know, whether it's with, you know, well, back then, this is the Best of the West was probably the number one long range one. I mean, there's a handful of them now. But, you know, you'd see that it is possible, but I never really got to experience it. And so, you know, after shooting Brian's gun and whatnot, it was like, okay, yeah, like I want to do this, you know. And then just talking with you about what's all involved, from, you know, ballistics to the, you know, the wind to just everything. I mean, spin of the earth, if you want to talk about, you know, shooting that far. But so, yeah, I mean, so let's just kind of take a step back. Introduce yourself, Brian, and kind of like where you come from and your background and kind of what made you the hunter you are today. I know that's loaded question, but we'll do a shortened version. Right, yeah, we'll do a shortened version of that, a summary.
To summarize it, let's see. I started out with archery. That was my first obsession. Did a lot of archery hunting. It's pretty much all I did up into my mid-30s. I was a professional archer, traveled all over the country shooting archery competitions, and elk hunted with a bow and mule deer hunted with a bow. And back then, it didn't even count if it was shot with a rifle to me. But that obsession with equipment and, you know, working on these bows for the tournaments and squeezing every bit of accuracy you could out of the bow transferred right over into the rifle when I did start long-range hunting. I took a school on it and just loved it. The two seemed identical to me. It's the same thing. You're with a bow or a rifle, you're compensating for distance and wind and different things, and so I just dove into that.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting, like, how long-range archery is similar to long-range rifle. As far as, like, you got to have your ducks in a row for it all to kind of connect and happen.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, there's more to the rifle side of it, but the basics are there. You're compensating for distance and you're you're always tinkering with your equipment and you're always testing it and shooting it and make sure your sight settings are right. And it's the same business with a rifle.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, as far as like long range comes or is involved, I did the same thing. I started shooting long range archery before I got into the rifle. You know, I mean, shoot, I hunted with a bow for almost 10 years without hunting with a rifle. And then now I've kind of transitioned to where I'm using both. But I got real, real efficient with my bow, and then now have kind of ventured out more or less just for different seasons and different, opportunities that having, the rifle and your bow and your arsenal, or having both of them, just the opportunities that it opens up, from hunting different states to different species. And, let's give me a kind of introduction to being, let's just say, efficient with a rifle. I don't want to necessarily say what's it take for a beginner to become a long range shooter, but more or less, what are some basic things when it comes to shooting a rifle that you think are important?
Oh man, there's so much to it. Let's see, you're trying to, I guess you're sizing it up for the guy that just to, if I'm understanding your question right, wants to shoot maybe 600 yards, wants to, some good proficiency, but not necessarily an extreme long range shooter, right?
Yeah, let's try. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You have a lot of options there, out to 600 yards. In that distance, there's a lot that doesn't matter. The Coriolis, the rotation of the earth doesn't matter. Your air density doesn't matter as much. You can possibly get away with factory ammo at that distance if you're shooting good quality stuff and your rifle likes it. So there's a lot that can be done and achieved out to 600 yards, but it still takes the work. You still got to put the time into your rifle, and you've got to validate it, and you got to map out that trajectory.
So let's stop right there. What do you mean by validate your rifle and your ammunition?
Well, by that, what I'm saying is you got to proof test it. You're not reading a speed off the box and putting it into a program, or you read the speed off the box and then you have a turret made off of that. You're actually seeing what your rifle needs for your minutes of angle to connect. And then once you have that mapped out, then you go ahead and make your turret.
And that's because every rifle shoots differently. So it may be the same ammo, but between two different rifles, there could be a 10 to 20 to even more feet per second difference.
Yeah, even quite a bit more than that.
Yeah.
Even 100 feet per second difference if the barrel lengths are considerably different.
I was just clarifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's about what I consider max for a bullet drop compensating reticle or a turret or something along those lines. Any kind of system that you're not calculating that individual shot. With a turret or a reticle, you're grouping all the shots of that same distance together, assuming that they're all going to connect the same way. But in the extreme long range, we calculate each shot. Each and every shot is its own calculation, where you're calculating everything with the barometric pressure, the shot angle, the Coriolis effect, all of that. Each shot is its own calculation. But with a bullet drop compensating turret, that's not the case. And in my mind, I think that maxes out at about 600 yards. And you can easily make a turret for more than that. You can make a turret to 1,000 yards or more. But a guy's got to police himself a little bit and realize that these other conditions start to matter, and you can't really rely on it past 600.
Right.
In various conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would agree that, it's just that 600 yards is that magical number that once you get past that, your variables multiply on themselves really quickly. And so, you know, I mean, a minimal error at 600 is exponential at 800. And that's where it gets tricky.
Right. Yeah, you start shooting around 1,000 yards. I mean, we're talking hunting proficiency, right? Which is at a higher standard than just trying to hit steel or rocks or paper or what have you, or walking a bullet into a target. We're talking about first round, where it's supposed to go, kind of accuracy. And it takes a lot of work to achieve that.
Yeah,
a lot of practice.
That's a good point. That's a very good point to bring up. You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, I myself have plinked rocks at over a mile, you know, no big deal. But obviously my first shot was like, I don't know, 6 to 10 feet off. But then I was able to walk it in and, you know, shooting a decent group, but it was that first shot call that I was way off, you know, but and part of that was me learning. You know, I was shooting across a giant canyon that was trying to read the thermals and the wind on the other side, and I misjudged it. But the only way you're ever going to learn is to get out there and do it. So, you know, that's, but I, yeah. Anyway, so let's take a step back even. So a guy wants to shoot 600 yards. You and I both know that he doesn't have to go out and buy a custom gun to do this. You know, anymore, these rifles that you can buy off the shelf are plenty good enough to shoot 600 yards. It's just, and shoot 600 yards very accurately. It's just a matter of lining up your ammunition system with your optics with, you know, and getting out there and actually figuring out what your gun wants, right?
Exactly. And that's what you do. That's what validation is you're walking it in on target. You're taking some long range shots with some general information, and you're just walking into the target, adjusting your turrets. And then you get to where you're hitting that rock right where you want it every single time. And you look at your turret setting, and that's what your gun wants to achieve that particular shot. And then you tweak your programs to agree with that.
Right.
You move your speed up and down occasionally if your ballistic coefficient, depending on what brand bullets you're shooting, the ballistic coefficient isn't that accurate. Sometimes you got to tweak that, but most of the time you're just creeping the speed up and down to where it agrees with what your rifle actually needs.
Yeah, and so that's obviously using like, you know, a minute or a mil type turret system where you're, you know, either using a program on your phone or you know, like one of the ballistic calculating rangefinders, like a G7 or one of the new SIGs, and so, you know, you're typing in all that information, and that's where he was saying on, you know, actually knowing your feet per second. Because so, like, what are the main factors that go into a ballistic calculating equation?
What goes into it?
Yeah. What are the main things that you enter into it?
You need your sight height, which is the center of the scope over the center of the bore. Typically 2 inches or just under, depending on the setup you got. The speed and the ballistic coefficient. The weight of the bullet, the caliber of the bullet. All those things don't really matter. Sometimes you'll enter them in programs. But those are accounted for in the ballistics coefficient of the bullet. So the program doesn't really need to know what caliber it is. Doesn't need to know how big around the bullet is.
It just needs to know its weight and its BC.
Right. Well, even the weight doesn't really matter either, depending on the program. Some programs, bullet length does play a role. And the bullet length plays a role in the spin drift of a bullet, but the actual caliber and the weight, those are calculated in the ballistic coefficient itself.
Oh, gotcha.
If you just had speed, ballistic coefficient, sight height, those three things will run most programs.
Right. And then those are your set variables, and then you get the, your set info, and then you have the variable one, which is wind. you know, that's the main variable input, right? Well, I guess I mean in the barometric pressure.
Yeah, and temperature, which creates air density. So your air density and your wind.
Your wind.
Yeah, and then the Coriolis effect. There's so much to this, isn't there?
Well, there is. It's so hard to like dumb it down and try and keep it simple.
Yeah, how do you make it basic? Basically, out to 1,000 yards, I don't worry about Coriolis effect, and that's the rotation of the Earth. And basically, for guys that don't really understand, if you're shooting east or west, your target during that time of flight, your target is rotating with the Earth, so it's either falling from your line of sight or it's coming up, so you're going to hit high or low because it's moving during that time of flight of the bullet. And out to 1,000 yards, it's really not that much. I think at 1,000 yards, it's total extreme from east to west is about 8 inches. So if you were to calibrate north, it'd be plus or minus 4 inches, which isn't that much. So below 1,000, I don't worry about it. Over 1,000, I do.
Right.
And so that's another barrier. So to me, 600 yards is a barrier for calculating shots in a group, you know, like on a turret where you're not calculating that exact shot. You're just using the distance and an average type of a system. And then from 600 to 1,000, I'm calculating each and every shot for that exact shot. And then after 1,000, I'm making sure I'm throwing that Coriolis effect and also the spin drift. Those are the two things past 1,000 that you got to worry about. The spin drift at 1,000 is maybe varies with bullets, but maybe 5 inches or so. So that's another thing you can get. You don't really have to worry about till you're over 1,000.
So let's dive into I get a lot of guys that are, you know, tell me, oh, you know, I mean, I could never shoot that far. It's just too hard. And I try to I guess in my mind, like I've dealt with the calculations and, you know, I've played around with my gun a lot. So I know what it's capable of. And in my mind, I tell them, if you can hit the bullseye at 300 yards, you can hit the bullseye at 800 yards. You know, I mean, pulling the trigger is the same. You know, it's just a matter of lining everything up. And I've suckered a lot of guys into, you know, getting into long range shooting because I dial my gun up. I put it in front of them, kind of like you did with me and your gun, you know,
right.
And said, here, you know, shoot that rock at, you know, 800 yards and boom, whack. And they hit it. And it's like, oh, I can do this, you know, and I don't know. Have you experienced where?
Oh, all the time I'm able to take a completely inexperienced shooter and have them hit stuff at 1,000 yards, all the time. It's as long as you can pull a trigger cleanly, you're gonna hit or come real close at 1,000 yards. The work is everything we just talked about, is the knowledge and homework that you got to put into a system to make it work. There is a few things that you can do to make yourself a better shot with your shooting form, preloading the bipod, different stuff like that that's going to tighten your groups.
So let's dive into that. Give us some basic.
Some basic form things is, you know, you want your rifle to react in a consistent way. It's going to shoot different off a bench versus a bipod versus a backpack. All these things are going to make it shoot a little bit different, whether you have a rear bag or not. And so I try to do all my validation in the way I hunt, which is with a bipod and typically no rear bag, and that keeps everything the same. When I get my gun set up that way, it's the way it's going to hunt. It should hit the same. But typical form things, you want to aim with your whole body versus having side pressure on the gun. So if you line up, you want to line up your body directly behind the rifle, not off to the side.
Right.
So if you get your body in line with the barrel directly behind it, and that's going to
enable you to find your target, reacquire the target after the recoil, and a lot of times see your shot. So out and around 1,000 yards, even less than that, maybe 600 yards, depending on the caliber, you can easily get back on target before the bullet hits. And it makes it super fun to shoot at stuff, shooting at rocks or steel or anything. Actually getting that feedback of the bullet hitting is pretty neat through the scope. So you line your body up, and that's gonna help with getting back on target and your consistency. And then you want to aim with your whole body, so you don't want to pull the butt of the rifle, the recoil pad, from side to side to fine tune your aim. You want to aim with your whole torso. You know what I'm saying? You lock it into your shoulder and then use your whole body to fine tune that aiming.
Mm.
And then as a rifle recoils, it doesn't want to, if you got side pressure on the stock, say your trigger hand is on the grip, and the grip, you should have no side pressure on the grip. So because if you do have side pressure, as soon as the gun starts to recoil, it's going to give to that pressure. So you just, the only pressure you want is straight back into your shoulder. So aim with your own body, no side pressure on the grip, push forward into the bipod a little bit. Yeah, it just makes everything.
And then do it consistently. Try to do it the same every time.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where, you know, if you've ever shot your buddy's gun or your parents' gun or, you know, whatever, somebody else's gun, and you'd say you don't hit in the same place. Not really. How do I explain that?
The biggest difference from person is probably the cheek weld on it. And they, you know, depending on how skilled they are, they may not be lining up their eye directly behind the scope. You may have a parallax issue with the crosshairs. So everybody, the appearance, the position of the crosshairs can move on you as you move your eye back and forth behind the scope.
But even then, that's only like 4 or 5 inches at 500 yards, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You're not going to miss an entire animal.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Exactly.
Huh.
Yeah. That's what, to go back to the tips, that's one thing you can do too, is have your scope far enough forward that you just barely start to see the dark ring around the visible portion of the scope. You know, if you look through the scope from quite a ways away, you can see a big dark ring and a small center of light.
Right.
And the closer you get, that light grows and fills the whole scope up. But if you shoot right where that dark ring starts to be visible, you can. That's a key for how centered your eye is.
Mm.
Right. So you can use that to align your eye almost like a peep sight behind your scope.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, and also if you adjust the parallax perfectly or the focus, that's going to put the crosshairs and your target in the same focus plane, and you're not going to get as much of that movement, you know, behind. If your eye isn't quite centered right, it's going to be more forgiving.
That's a good tip. I never have heard that one before. I feel like optics is the same conversation wherever you go, where it's buy the best that you can afford. I really don't necessarily want to dive into that because I think that pretty much speaks for itself.
I would just say choose for the platform that you got. You know, if you're trying to make a real lightweight rifle setup, you probably don't want a real heavy scope on it, but you'll have to research and figure out what lightweight scopes are still capable of precision and adjustment and performance.
Right.
And there's a few of them that are lightweight and still very dependable.
A lot of times though, when you're talking a super lightweight rifle, you know, you're still only talking a 600 yard gun. Just in the theory that, you know, the lighter the gun, the harder it is to shoot, you know, those longer shots. You know, it's hard. It seems like, you know, the tactical boys don't go out and shoot a 6-pound gun in competition.
And that's why I have so many. There's no perfect rifle, right?
Right.
So I've got a bunch of them from as big as they get to fairly small ones.
Yeah, and I swear you're always building new ones, because it seems like you're selling some occasionally to pay for some hunts, and then you got to rebuild them because you sold them. And
or you see a gap in my system. It's like, oh, I have a 12-pound gun and I got a 7-pound gun, but I don't have anything in between, and there's a perfect caliber for that, you know.
Yeah.
So right. I've got four rifles right now that pretty much bridge the whole gap of anything you could want, I would think. You know, the exact calibers aren't necessarily that important. It's the system, the build, you know, with weight and distance in mind.
And the reason you want, you know, more weight for longer distance is, you know, basically for less wind drift, right?
For you're talking bullet weight.
Well, just in general. I mean, like, you know, you've always said you pack that 16-pound gun of yours everywhere because you know it's going to hit the bullseye no matter what.
Yeah, it is so dependable, and it is so powerful. And what we're talking about is a 375 Chi-Tac.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest gun, and it is extremely powerful. We shot a couple of brown bears a couple of months ago with it in Alaska. And the guide, before the hunt, he said, I've never seen a one-shot kill. Been guiding brown bears forever. They take lead like no other animal. And I was pretty cocky about my rifle. I said, well, you're going to see a one-shot kill this time. And sure enough, I helped it. My special deal for the hunt was I got a reduced price and everything. If I helped out on the first hunt. And so I helped the hunter, and it turned into a long range shot. He asked to use my rifle, and he shot this brown bear over 700 yards and dropped it with one shot.
Wow.
And it has 5,000 at that distance. It had over 5,000 pounds of kinetic energy still.
Holy crap.
Which is a ton. That's let's see, to compare, a 338 Lapua has 5,600 pounds at the muzzle. And that Chi-Tac had that much, that still had that much power at over 700 yards.
Wow. What grain bullet is that?
350 grain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I figured it was over 300.
And that's plenty of power for the animal, right? You know, that's not the main reason we shoot big guns is to overpower the elements and the wind and to fight that dang wind drift. That's the big thing right there, is to cut down that wind drift. And I normally will compare rifles with 15 mile an hour wind at 1,000, and that Chi-Tac has 49 inches of drift in 15 mile an hour wind at 1,000
versus what does the 338 have?
The 338 has
with the 300 grain bullet
65 inches of drift, which is still really good.
Yeah, but that's you know you're comparing the two biggest basically, and it's, you know, and not quite double, but
better. You know, the 6.5 Creedmoor is quite the rage these days, and it drifts less than a lot of guns, less than a 308, a lot of the 30 calibers, and in that same scenario, 15 miles an hour at 1,000 yards, my Creedmoor drifts 100 inches, so over double.
Wow.
Over double what the Chi-Tac does. And the 6.5, you know, that's a high ballistic, fast bullet. And that just shows you the difference. You know, the bigger is better with wind drift, as long as you got the power behind it, obviously. You can't shoot a 375 H&H and think it's going to drift less. But as long as you got the power behind it, and that right there is why I've got so many bigger guns. You know, I have a Lapua, I have that 375 Chi-Tac, and it's not because we're always going after giant animals, but we are always dealing with the wind and trying to battle that.
Right, right. And I mean, I don't know, the long range kind of rifle always seems to bring up the long range shooting debate. And not that I want to jump into that too heavily, but maybe just like give what I feel is our opinion. It's not that we're like going out to shoot an animal 1,000 yards because that's what we want to do. It's just that we want to go out, and when we see an animal, we want to be able to capitalize on that opportunity. You know, it's, you know, when we are hiking in, you know, 5, 10, 15 miles and get that one opportunity, and we know that, or I guess the thing is we don't know that we can get closer without missing the opportunity or having a chance at another opportunity and have the capabilities to take that shot right there, like, I'm going to do it, you know, and
you always get closer if you can.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of times you don't, you can't.
Right.
And, you know, in the old days, you go back to camp, you tell everybody about the big buck you saw that was too far away.
Right? Yeah. Well, and it's also not that we are, you know, then like the other debate to it is, oh, you know, real guys use bow. And it's like, well, that's not the case either, because we both have killed awesome animals with our bows and enjoy it just as much.
Yep. So, I had one year that I shot an elk with a recurve bow, shot a bull elk with a compound bow, and then I shot a bull long range rifle over 1200 yards, all in the same season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, capitalizing on opportunity, just like I said. I mean, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. And we're talking about precision shots. We're not talking about just throwing lead, you know?
Right.
We're talking about educated shots that you have extreme confidence in. And when I took my first long range shooting class, that's one thing the instructor really drilled in to me was you never ever take a shot hoping it's going to work, ever. If you miss, you need to be shocked that you missed. You need to have that kind of confidence or it's too far. You know, he wasn't going to tell everybody, okay, you should only shoot this distance or that distance or whatever. It's not necessarily about that. It's about practicing that so much that you have complete confidence that it's going to work. If you're, right. You never pull that trigger, no matter what kind of weapon it is, a bow or muzzleloader or anything, you never let that thing go hoping that it's going to work. You should know that it's going to work.
Right. No, I agree completely. One that comes to mind for me, I missed one of the biggest deer that I've shot at getaway in Wyoming a few years ago. And he was out there. He was like 8:32 or something. And when I shot, and my buddy's like, you missed. And I'm like, what? Like, I mean, I literally reload, and I said, there's no way. And I'm looking, and I'm like, where'd I hit? He's like, I don't know. I didn't see it. And you know, looking back at the video, I shot just over his back. And, you know, I didn't quite have what I'm guessing was there was an uphill thermal in that morning. And I just miscalculated, or it could have been the speed. And there's a lot of different factors. But anyways, I shot right over him. And so I was like, there's no way. And I reload. I'm like, okay, well, I'll get back on him. Same thing. Shoot the second shot. I hit the same spot. I mean, so it's like, same thing. I didn't know where I hit. This is all looking back at the video afterwards, but I was dumbfounded. And so then, knowing the buck ran up and over the hill, and I said, well, I'm going to walk over there and look for blood anyway, even though I'm pretty sure that I didn't hit him, and walk over there, you know, find his tracks, you know, and he's gone, no blood. And so then I get back to where we were sitting, and I said, well, we already shot in this canyon this morning. I might as well, you know, shoot a couple more times to, like, figure out what the heck went wrong, and dial up, shoot at this little dirt clump that was, like, right where the deer was standing, and I drilled it. And it just, that was so frustrating, you know, and I mean, first shot. And all I could figure is, you know, the sun had come up and those winds had shifted, and I was right back where I needed to be. I'll be honest, it was so dead calm that morning where I was sitting, and I couldn't see anything, you know, like the sun wasn't up. There wasn't a mirage or anything to kind of judge the wind there. And looking at the grasses, everything looked fairly calm from where I was sitting. And so I didn't hold for any wind. And like left to right, there wasn't any. You know, I mean, I, and it still could have even been a slight variance in my bullet speed at that altitude that was part of the problem. I don't really, still don't 100% know.
We could dive into that topic too.
Another thing that it could have been, so since my bullet speed, well, it would have been, that doesn't make any sense because it would have been faster. I don't know. Like, it's still to this day, it boggles me that I missed. Because I practiced so much, you know, at 1,000 yards, feeling that, you know, at 800, it's a dead deer. And I missed.
Yeah. Yep. Those thermals will get you. When I was setting up my Shytac for this brown bear hunt, early in the morning, I was shooting milk jugs at 1,000 yards and hitting them, and everything was good. Then I was shooting some of the other rifles, and it warmed up quite a bit. And a couple hours later, I went back to the Shytac to shoot another milk jug, and I shot over it by maybe 6 inches, quite a bit. And so I put another round in, shot over it again, 6 inches. And I could not figure out why the heck it did that. And so I went and shot the next day, and I thought it was temperature related. I thought maybe it warmed up, the ammo's shooting faster because I had hot ammo, you know, which can happen depending on what kind of powder you're using. And actually, H1000 slows down a little bit when it gets hot. So you kind of need to experiment with what you have going on. But anyway, I did a big test on it, and I had some ammo in the freezer overnight, put it in the cooler with ice packs, and I had another one set of ammo left on the dash on the truck. It got nice and warm, and I shot them both back to back at 1,000 yards, a different location, very minimal distance. And difference between the two, and I chronographed them, and it was very acceptable difference between the two. So that wasn't it. But thinking back on that day, the wind changed, and the wind was blowing right at me, and I had a lift on that shot, and that's why I missed that milk jug.
Oh yeah,
those two times because I just had a lift. You know, typically we think of wind affecting right and left, but it definitely will affect your elevation too.
And that could have been it. The day I missed that buck, I could have had a headwind that I didn't know about, and it drifted up and over him. And I mean, you know, we're talking. I was probably holding high shoulder because that's where I like to aim, and so, you know, we're talking a foot. But I shot over him, you know, I mean, so really at that far, it's not, it doesn't take much calculation to get that far off, you know, as far as a variable. You know, like you said, that 600 yards, the magic number where past that.
Man, you can get away with a lot. 600 yards, if you do your homework, you validate, you order an engraved knob, that is right. You're not just going off the speed on the box or something like that. But if you do your homework, find out what your rifle needs, make a knob for it, man, you'll have great success out to 600 yards.
Yeah.
So that would recommend that as a max for the average guy. So it's very achievable with factory ammo, with a factory rifle, as long as it's all quality stuff, that can be done and achieved pretty easily and inexpensively.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I shoot a Tika right now. I mean, that's 7mm Tika, you know, and I mean, you've seen it shoot 1,000 yards. I mean, it's a great gun. I mean, yeah, I've got good optics on it, but it's just a plain Jane Tika that I put a muzzle brake on and a different butt pad because those Tika butt pads are hard as a rock. And that's it. You know, I mean, a $650 rifle that shoots 1,000 yards because I, you know, do everything else to back it up. So,
yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I think we touched on enough there to confuse enough people.
Yeah, we can touch on that elevation change issue. I got a good story that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
With that that Kyrgyzstan hunt that I went on for Marco Polo and Ibex.
Yeah.
Obviously a huge hunt. What's that?
I was going to say, start off with like what the elevation does or can do.
Oh, well, the elevation thins the air, so the air density is a lot thinner. Bullets maintain their speed for a lot longer. And so you'll hit quite a bit higher, a lot less drop, the higher the elevation. And obviously this hunt was a hunt of a lifetime, you know, so I put a ton of work, took the 338 Lapua, and man, I put a lot of work into that, making sure it's just absolutely perfect before I left. And I get there and check zero, zero's good. And then I turn to a mountain and I go to shoot like 1,200 yards, 1,000 yards, something like that. And I hit way high. I mean, way high, like 4 feet high.
Oh, wow.
And it didn't make sense because the program should calculate for that thinner air, right? I know exactly what the elevation is. I put it in, it should work. Well, it didn't. It hit way, way high. And so I readjusted my speed and got dialed in, validated it to where I was hitting right on, hit 1,000 yards or 1,100, whatever the distance was. And I varied it quite a bit, and I shoot different shot angles to make sure my programs were working. And then we got into this hunt, and we hunted ibex first. And I let my buddy go first, and he shot his ibex, and then there's another group of ibex that up the canyon that spooked from that shot, and they went a little bit farther up the ridge, and we got up there, and the closest we get to this ibex was 900 yards across this valley, and I had confidence in my stuff, and because I just validated it the day before, and actually that morning I like to get up and take a shot every morning too. We could easily do that in camp, so I did. And anyway, I made that 900 yard shot on that ibex and just smoked him, hit him absolutely perfect. You know, it was all because I did my homework, you know, and was religious about testing my equipment.
Yeah.
And then when I got back, and I got my Marco Polo too, about 450 yard shot. And then I got back and I worked a week, and then I had a guy Desert Sheep in Mexico. So I took that same rifle to Mexico, and Kyrgyzstan was 15,000 feet elevation, and Mexico was 300 feet where we were hunting Desert Sheep.
Yeah.
Talk about a shock to the system, going from absolutely bitter cold to worried about getting heat stroke and sunburn, you know. And then once again, my rifle didn't behave right. I got down there and it was shooting way low, and you know, that's with the programs knowing the elevation. So I dropped it about 100 feet per second and got lined out again. I ended up, I helped the guy get his Desert Sheep, and then I coos deer hunted, and I shot a coos deer 700 yards with it.
Oh, awesome.
That I couldn't have done had I not, you know, reacquired the performance of the rifle.
So what makes you think that it changed so much? Like, I mean, where you're saying that the calculation in the program should have changed it. Why didn't it, do you think?
This is my opinion. This is the way it works in my head. Is,
yeah.
That yes, the program will accommodate for the air density as it should, but it cannot calculate for the internal ballistics inside the gun, you know, while the barrel's traveling down the barrel, the speed and the pressures are going to change with the elevation during the shot. So the program will take it after it leaves the gun, right? But the gun is physically shooting a slower speed or a faster speed because of the elevation also. So it can't really predict that.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. And so the way, I mean, without packing, a way to read your bullet speed. What do they call those things? I'm drawing a blank on the
taking a chronograph.
Yeah, a chronograph. Yeah, a chronograph. I couldn't think of the name. Instead of packing a chronograph up on the mountain, the way you're validating it is just by changing the bullet speed to hit where you want to hit.
Yeah, I'll just take and I try to do this anywhere I go now, you know, and it pretty much started on my stone sheep hunt in the Yukon. Is once again, I did a ton of work on my rifle, got it dialed in perfectly before that hunt, went up there, and it was off. You know, the zero was on, but it was, I was shooting a rock at 800 yards, and it wasn't right. And so I had to tweak my speed again. So I, from those experiences, I do it every time, shoot all the time. Make sure that your equipment's working right in your hunting area, you know, where not exactly in your valley you're hunting necessarily, but in that environment.
Right. You know, it's funny because before long range rifle shooting, I did this bow hunting. Not necessarily for the same reasons, you know, with, you know, your speed changing and whatnot, but just, you know, hiking around the woods all the time with your bow, it's, you know, it's so easy to, you know, bump it on a tree limb or whatever, you know. And like, I always carried either a judo point or a field point with me and would periodically just test my bow. You know, I mean, it's also not near as is invasive with a bow going off versus a rifle boom, you know, I mean, so you just stump shoot, you know, or pick out a piece of dirt on a hillside and, you know, just test the bow, make sure that everything's good. And it just keeps your confidence up too, you know, that you know that when you get that opportunity that, you know, you're going to be able to capitalize. And
yep.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a little bit tougher to do with a rifle as far as, you know, you're trying not to spook the animals and whatnot. Yeah, but
and I've just recently got into suppressors now too, and that is a real big reason, right? Why right there is all the sheep hunting that I do, and I guide doll sheep every year, and to be able to shoot in camp with a suppressed rifle and know it's all going to work, and maybe have a client that wants to use a rifle and you can let him shoot it in camp and see what it can do. You know, it turns out that almost all the clients end up using my rifle, but because of that suppressor, we're able to do that. We can shoot in camp and not worry about spooking sheep miles away.
Yeah, that's a good point. Huh. Wow. Some good tips there. See, I mean, you know, we talk all the time and I'm still learning stuff. So, yeah, in fact, I meant to get out this last weekend and shoot mine, and then the guy I was going to go with bailed on me, and so I didn't go. But I got a bunch of bullets loaded up and I need to get out and double check everything before season. It's creeping up on me, like 25 days left, so
yeah, I'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, it's coming quick. Well, shoot. Man, I don't really know what else to talk about when it comes to shooting a rifle. I mean, other than there's so much more to talk about, but I just don't know that I want to dive that deep, you know? I mean, you could dive into a whole hour just talking about reloading it's in general. You know what I mean? Yeah. But
there's a lot to learn, you know. The main thing is, if you're wanting to get into long range shooting, serious long range shooting, take a course on it, go spend the money, go to a class. They're not cheap and they take some time, but they're well worth it. And if you want to keep it 600 yards or less, then, you can do that without a class. You know, there's plenty of information out there. Just shoot, do your homework and take it serious, and you'll have great success. You know, I was trying to think of a game plan or something exactly to tell guys, but it is it's a serious issue. You know, guys get out to some of these big hunts, some of these clients that I guide, and they think they're ready, but they're really not. Last year we had, I think opening day, we killed 5 rams, and all 5 hunters missed their first shot. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
And these, you know, this is a big hunt. These guys paid $20,000 to be on this hunt.
Right.
And they thought they had their ducks in a row, but they didn't. So, you know, put your homework in, do a ton of shooting. Try and be proficient with your gear.
Yeah. I know. I think the best advice you can give is just to get out there and shoot. You know, the more you shoot, the more comfortable you're going to feel with it. And obviously, you know, you're going to make mistakes, and that's why it's good to do it at the range or shooting at rocks and learn from it, you know. And every time something goes wrong when I'm out shooting, it's like, you know, you always ask why and try and figure it out. And when I can't figure it out, I call Brian.
Yeah.
And then and he gives me 50 reasons of why it could have done it, and it doesn't help me at all.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. I guess that's about all you can tell guys. Just do it. Just get out there and shoot your equipment and learn it. And
it's fun.
Make sure it's working right, you know. And I just see it time and time again. In fact, this the Desert Sheep guide, the guy that I guided, I was telling you about earlier, he gets there and he had a bullet drop compensating turret, and I looked on his turret and his turret said 8,000 feet elevation on it.
Oh, geez.
And we're on Desert Sheep at 300 feet, and I'm like, oh no. This is not gonna work. So we went and shot his rifle and it was off, but we ended up setting it at I think 450 yards. We took the turret loose and we lined up where 450 yards was actually hitting 450 yards, and then and he killed a Boone Crockett ram at 400 yards with it and smoked it. So you know what would have happened if I didn't do that? I don't know, probably would have shot over the ram, I guess.
Yeah,
but it's I see guys doing that time and time again, and you know, don't just blindly buy something or order a turret off box speed or think it's going to work. Validate it all the time, every time.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yep.
Well, what do you got coming up this season?
I leave in a couple of weeks to go guide doll sheep again, and then I'm home for a week. Work a week of my regular job, and then I go back and guide grizzly bears. Then I'm back for a few more weeks, and I go back and hunt deer on Kodiak Island.
Oh, jeez!
I'm super excited about that Kodiak hunt because we're going to be fishing and living on the boat for a week and going to land whenever the weather's nice and hunting. It's going to be a really relaxing hunt. You know, I do these high stress hunts either for myself or I'm guiding clients, and it's just high stakes, high stress all the time. And it's going to be really just to go hunt some deer and do some fishing.
What are the dates on that? Do you know?
October 6th, I think.
Going pretty early. Gotcha. Because I think I'm going to be there like the first week of October or of November.
Oh
yeah, a month later. At least I think we haven't actually arranged everything, but there's plans in the works. But awesome. Well, I'm pretty sure I will see you up here.
I'm hoping I get some time. My schedule is always so tight, but hopefully I'll get some time and go do some fishing or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll definitely be around for the sheep season, but I won't be around later because then I'm heading down to your country to elk hunt. So.
Oh, right.
It'll be fun. I'm excited. Season's like so close. Yeah. And once it starts, it just snowballs and you don't even have time to think. It's like, but. Well, thanks for jumping on and, giving us your time about giving us some tips on long range shooting and shooting some rifles. And I definitely even picked up a couple tips from it myself. I'm not going to change anything on my rifle right now, but the next time I'm out of scope, I'm definitely going to look into that, you know, putting it to where that black starts to turn on. That was a good tip. You didn't tell me that before. What the heck?
I don't know. I'm going to keep a secret from you.
Yeah. So
well, appreciate you having me.
Yeah, no, I'll have to have you on again and do some more storytelling instead of tip talk, because you got a few stories to share, that's for sure. So, well, alrighty, bud. Until next time.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Thanks, man.